You're listening to the Parking Podcast. Views and opinions are my own. This episode is brought to you by 11X. Take control of your parking with ExactPark, a smart parking solution that provides real-time occupancy monitoring at the stall level and powerful data insights. ExactPark enables drivers to quickly and easily find available parking while helping organizations balance their parking space use, better manage the curbside, reduce congestion, and offer optimized programs and policies for a better parking experience for all. Learn more at 11-x.com. Welcome back to another episode of the Parking Podcast. We got a special surprise episode today. Listeners of the podcast are familiar with Donald Shoup, author of The High Cost of Free Parking. He's been on the podcast before. In this book, Shoup has recommended three parking reforms. Number one, charge market prices for curb parking, the lowest prices that will leave one or two parking spaces open on every block. Those curb spaces will be both well-used and readily available. And number two, dedicate the parking meter revenue to improve public services in the meter neighborhoods. Better neighborhood services will make market price curb parking politically popular. And number three, of course, we all know this one by heart, remove off-street parking requirements. So Dr. Shoup wrote this book in the 90s before the explosion of technology was readily available to implement some of these reforms. But that's changed in recent years. So we have new technologies like what 11X brings to the table that have helped make Shoup's vision become a reality. So I invited Dan Mathers, CEO and co-founder at 11X, and Donald Shoup onto the podcast for a fireside chat to discuss these technologies and how they help with Shoup's reforms. Plus, he has a few new reforms up his sleeve that he's recently written about. Hopefully, we can tackle some of those. But, you know, I just think you're really going to love this conversation. So sit back, enjoy the conversation. I know I did.
Thanks. Yeah, Donald, great being here with you. Really looking forward to not only talking about, you know, the high cost of free parking and the conclusions there, but also, you know, I know you've done some recent work on parking reforms and you know, I'm really looking forward to being able to talk about what's been preventing maybe the practical implementation of all of your ideas and research, and what the future holds as we you know, move forward. So,
well, I've been following your work. It seems to me that anything that I have recommended is impossible without the sorts of new technology that has been invented since I published The High Cost of Free Parking in 2005. That I just assumed that all that technology was there, that if you wanted to charge the right prices for curb parking, it'd be very, very easy to change the meter rates remotely without touching the meters. And it'd be very easy to report the occupancy rate of every curb space. And you could set prices based on the occupancy rate that you see, but none of that existed really in 2005. I think, you know, the parking meter was invented in 1935, but there had been hardly any improvements in the next 70 years. I mean, it was the most moribund technology, maybe outside of North Korea, that you had ever seen. Can you think of any other payment mechanism that had not changed since 1935? and that people were just accustomed to the idea that you put your money in the meter and hope to get back before it runs out. When the first parking meters came in, people thought it was just an infernal combination of a slot machine and an alarm clock. But now, since the, I guess maybe the 21st century, the technology has exploded in ways that nobody could have imagined, and especially in the United States, because most of the technology that was invented in the 20th century came from Europe, or because they needed this technology. They didn't have an immense amount of parking everywhere. They charge for a lot of parking. And I think that's how the Europeans got a head start. But now I think that the United States is coming through with some new technology, and I want to hear more about what 11X does.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, really great points. And, it takes an entire community and, multiple parties to make all of this stuff a reality. Without, the wonderful research and data and ideas that you've published, companies like us, would not have had a North Star in terms of what we're trying to achieve here. Really, when it comes down to it, we want to help people find parking anytime, anywhere they want to. And, we define ourselves as a smart parking and curbside technology company. But really, what we're doing is we're focusing on collecting data and using it to drive outcomes, including reducing traffic congestion. You know that 30% of traffic in cities is caused by people looking for parking. We are also focusing on reducing greenhouse gases, gas emissions.
I can respond to one of the things, or two of the things you just said, that I should have made the point that Canada was ahead of the United States in technology as well. Not just Europe, but for some reason, the Canadians were way advanced from the United States. The second one is this mythical number that 30% of traffic is cruising for parking. And when you think about it, that can't be true. But I think I'm to blame for that number, because I had looked at studies of cruising for parking, and the first ones were in 1927 in Detroit, appropriately, and they found that I think between 18% of traffic was cruising on one of the sites, and maybe 30% on another site. And then other people looked at different ways of measuring how much traffic is cruising for parking. They cruised themselves. They went to chose a destination and went to it and found out how long it took to find a space. That would take you how long it took to find a parking space. That's easier to estimate. And others tried to estimate what percentage of the traffic was cruising. Which is harder. One of the things that I did was to look at the share of the traffic that passes a newly opened space before a car takes it. Say if an open space appears on the street and if 25 cars pass it before the first car takes it, surely 30% of the traffic can't be cruising. And I think as a handy way to figure whether the traffic is cruising, I would take the key out of my pocket and approach the car door of any parked car and act as though I was getting into it. And if the first car stopped, if when they saw me doing it, I thought, well, that's probably a lot of cruising. But if a lot of cars went past, they're not cruising. And that key in the door system has turned into a more elaborate statistical technique of measuring how many cars pass a newly opened space. But that 30% number applies only to very crowded streets, that all the spaces are crowded and the traffic is congested. So in downtown, that maybe in downtown, it could be 100% of the traffic is cruising. And they found that in some areas because they're on the streets that are not a through route. They're just sort of a small side street. And if a lot of cars are just driving along that, what are they looking for? Why are they on the street? Because it doesn't go anywhere. They're really hunting for parking. But anyway, I think that the sites that you're looking at in Arlington are the very busy areas. But I wouldn't keep on saying that 30% of traffic is hunting for parking.
Interesting. Well, of course, it depends on the city. I mean, the nice thing about parking is that most of us drive, most of us park the car. We all have our own anecdotal evidence as well about what happens. And you're absolutely right. If I'm in, small town, I might not have any problem finding parking on Main Street. If I'm in, you know, one of the communities near us is Stratford, Ontario, and, you know, they have 35,000 people that live there, except that they have the world's largest Stratford Festival outside of Stratford, England, every summer, where they put on a whole bunch of Shakespearean plays. And everyone tries to park on the same three streets, and they just keep driving around the block until parking is available, instead of going one or two streets over where there's plenty of parking. And I know, because I've done it myself as well. And you know, you mentioned Arlington as well, where it's very difficult to find a parking spot. And so, yeah, it can be anywhere. Maybe it's more accurate to say it can be anywhere from 0 to 100% of traffic is caused by people looking for parking, depending upon the circumstances, time of day, and et cetera.
Well, yes, I think that Stratford would be a perfect example of a city that needs what you do, is to charge the right price for curb parking, which would vary by time of day and whether there's a performance that day or it's snowing. And it's in a place like Stratford that charging for curb parking is like what Monty Python said was the way to solve Britain's economic problems is to tax foreigners living abroad. and parking meters do that, because I think a lot of the people who are parking on a street do not live there, but they're very grateful that they could find a curb space. So it's not a tax. It's a user charge, but it's a user charge that is paid mainly by non-residents in a place like Stratford. So it's a way to get revenue without putting an undue burden on the residents, like having taxes on rental cars at airports. Those are very popular taxes. It seems obviously that somebody else other than me is paying for it, or hotel taxes. So I think that if you spend the meter revenue in a way that people can see that this benefits me, it'll make your technology very popular. And that's why I recommend the third point that Isaiah mentioned, is the parking benefit districts, is that if you flamboyantly spend the money on improvements to the block for where the meters are, say some cities give free Wi-Fi to everybody on the block, some give free transit passes to everybody who works on the block, and they can see that these parking meters are a good idea, and let's charge the market price. So I think that that your company will do very well, especially in places like Arlington and Stratford.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know. So Stratford, just to kind of continue on with the story a little bit, their population balloons to 150,000 people. For a city where you know the infrastructure was kind of developed for 35,000. So to be able to help people, not only encourage them to go to where the parking is through demand-based pricing, but also so charging the right price for the right time for the right parking, and at the same time helping them find that parking, because most cities in our experience have more than enough parking capacity. What they don't have is, because for years and years, of course, you know, there has been this notion that you need to build X number of off-street parking stalls for, you know, if you're building, you have a bowling alley or whatever, you know, you need to have 15 stalls, or a condo, you need to have 1.5 or 2 stalls per condo. So there's more than enough parking, but now, especially that, most communities and organizations are removing those off-street parking requirements, what's happening is you need to make sure you use more efficient use of that existing parking. And to do that, you need to not only ticket efficiently, you need to be able to have the right price for the parking, and you need to be able to guide people to where that parking is. And that's fundamentally what we do and what we focus on doing in the cities that we work in. There's another city in Canada that's very similar. It's almost a sister city to Arlington County, where, you know, it's about 200,000 people or so. pretty high per capita income. And, you know, they get 1 million visitors a year during the, you know, tourists. And, you know, they had a problem on their main street that it was, you know, 99.5% occupied always. And it was causing a real brand issue for their city. And so what, you know, they wanted to do was make sure that people knew where all the parking was, encourage people to use that parking efficiently, not necessarily on that main street, Lakeshore Avenue. And now the occupancy on that main street hovers around 60 to 70%, which I think is right in that magic window that you've said previously. Make sure there's one to two, you know, a couple of spots on every block face, you know, in between two cross streets. And then you're going to be able to meet that objective of people being able to find parking anytime they want to. And, you know, whether, you know, there's a lot of congestion due to that, you know, traffic in that city due to people looking for parking, or, you know, less, it's just going to be good overall, especially when, you know, you layer into that the parking benefit districts, right, where you're going to kind of encourage cities to use paid parking and the receipts of those paid parking to improve their community and get everybody on side politically. I think that was
yes. One well, of the I don't mean the community. I mean the very micro community the money you put into a meter comes right out the other side and cleans the sidewalk or on that block or removes graffiti every night or has extra police protection. The community is a very vague term, and I think it would be a micro community is what I have in mind. And I guess the other thing is that we'll probably be in a transitional phase as people look back on what you're doing now. They'll say that the benefit wasn't to show people, well, there are spots available. There'll be spots available everywhere. What you have to tell them is what the price is. Wherever they go, they'll see spaces available, but there'll be quite different prices. This certainly turned out in San Francisco, which is the first city to try this with its SF Park program starting in 2011. And the results were, they did just what you're talking about. Well, the prices were too low. The spaces were full, and the next month they would raise it by 25 cents an hour. And if it was too high, they would reduce by 25 cents an hour. And they did that every 3 months. So there were very few changes. But it took about 2 years for the prices to settle down. They kept, if they can only go up by 25 cents an hour, and when they started everywhere at $2 an hour, it took a long time to get to $6 an hour. But it didn't take long to get down to 25 cents an hour. What happened was that more prices went down than went up, because if you have the same price all day long, the price is going to be wrong most of the time. It'll be either too low or too high. So they found that the price has been much too high in the morning. And there were whole blocks of meters with no cars.
Yes.
And so they reduced the prices. But what they ended up, and the average price actually went down 4%. I mean, that means essentially they stayed the same. But because so many prices declined in the morning and prices increased in the afternoon, the net effect was a 4% decline. But that surprised everybody, including me. But what also surprised people was that the prices could vary so much in a short location, that there were prices at 50 cents an hour on one block, and on the next street, it was $3 an hour. So I think is that people didn't understand that the prices varied by such huge amounts over such short distances. And maybe this could happen in Arlington. What I recommended, nobody took the advice, I think, is that restaurants ought to put a map of prices in their windows. If there are some, like the price is very high on the streets where you want to be.
Yeah, that's right.
And the low prices are blocks where you don't want to go to. But But if you show in your menu in your restaurant window, well, here's the how the price is so much cheaper in the next block, that it would help in several ways. It would help bring more customers, and it would make the system work better. That it would make people more responsive to prices, at least the regulars. The tourists, they don't know what that there is an 11x or that prices vary or anything like that. They just go to the meter like we all do, and we pay what the meter price is. You don't know before you park what the price is going to be, unless in the future cars will be able to tell you. They're in their dashboard, they'll be able to say, well, what is the best place to park? But in the meantime, you have to convey to people, well, gee, you could get a big bargain at a different time and a slightly different location.
Well, those are all a lot of very, very interesting points. Certainly, the SF Park study is very famous, and the foundational technology to a lot of these solutions of demand-based pricing and et cetera, is you got to know what the occupancy is in each of the stalls. Because if you don't have data, then you can't make informed policy decisions. And that's what we've found. So you mentioned Arlington a number of times. Yeah, I mean, it's not enough just to change the pricing. It's going to be 25 cents here for this period of time. And, it's going to be, $3 here. You actually have to look at what day it is, what time of day it is. Is it a Saturday? Is it a Sunday? Is it a holiday? Is it business hours? And you have to have a pricing policy that incents drivers to behave as you want them to behave to get balanced occupancy. I completely, and in fact, that's what we do in Arlington with different meter hours, different pricing. And it all starts with, the foundational technology of having a subterranean stall occupancy sensor that, in our case is completely encased in epoxy and uses a whole bunch of patented techniques to get very a high level of accuracy in terms of whether or not there's actually a car in that spot, which turns out to be a very difficult thing to do. And especially if you're trying to get a very long 10-year battery life so that the cost is, very effective. If you look at, and I think your idea about pricing, putting pricing on a map in restaurants and where people go, that's very good. I know we've got a large community engagement happening where, even something as simple as putting stickers on the meters themselves to explain it is a key part of it. But if you think about the parking problem, we know from the communities that we've talked to, and I just gave you an example of Stratford, sometimes 70% of the people aren't from that community. And they still all want to park on that exact same street. And so unless you can help them find parking at the right price point, because it's too late after they've parked their car and driven around the block trying to find a spot that everyone else is trying to park on, and it's too late for them to go and change their behavior. So one of the things that's interesting is, in addition to those ideas that you had, we have both a public-facing website and, more importantly, a mobile app that kind of sits on top of Google Maps or Apple Maps or Waze or whatever navigation platform you want to use, that where you can basically select, I need an EV stall, right? Or I need an accessibility, an ADA stall, or, I have a permit and, I need to know where all the A-class permits can park, or I have a, I'm willing to pay for parking, or I want, or I'm willing to pay more for parking or less for parking. Because if you can do that, now, as you're approaching the city, you think about it as Google finding the address, and then we find the parking spot that matches your requirements. Because if there's two spots on a block face, but you have an EV car and you need a stall with an EV charger, and those two open spaces don't have EV charging stalls, you're still going to look be causing the problem of driving around. So I think it's not one solution, but it's a combination of solutions that match the driving experience that incent drivers to do the things that we need them to do, and you know, to make your research come true. That's going to be a combination. If you're from out of town, you know, you're not necessarily going to know, like I said, that there's parking three streets over with a certain price. But if you take a combination of things like, and we can use Arlington as an example there too, because they're a very leading community. You know, what they want to do is have digital signs that we're putting up that have where the price parking is plus the pricing. So now when you're driving in there, you can see where the pricing of each of the available stalls is. And this is all real time as it changes throughout the day. So the driver doesn't have to remember that it's $3 per hour at noon, but it's, you know, only 50 cents at 9 a.m. And then on top of that, having that real-time occupancy in the navigation app that everyone's using anyways, that allows you to find the specific stall that meets your requirements. And then we can achieve those objectives of having, you know, people making efficient use of parking and making sure that for those people that are not necessarily using these, you know, either an app or paying attention to the digital sign, that we still achieve the objective of 1 to 2 spots per block face. And so that's really what our whole goal is in the communities that have deployed our solutions. And it's not just about us, it's a big market. There's a lot of other companies that provide great solutions as well. But what we found is that, you know, those outcomes that we're looking for are achieved. One of the things that was proven, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Donald, in the SF Park study as well, is that actually 30% of vehicle-related greenhouse gas emissions are due to people looking for parking, and they could draw a correlation of, you know, being able to implement these types of techniques with driving down greenhouse gas emissions. So that also helps cities and you know, achieve their sustainability objectives, and also improves our planet and our communities.
Well, yes, I mean, certainly very encouraging. I mean, it's so much more sophisticated than I could have imagined when I was recommending that cities should do this. But I mean, getting back to Stratford and places like it, that whatever you have to buy tickets before you go to those places. You know that there are different prices for different parts of the auditorium. That you're used to the idea of different prices at different locations. And when they're all bought on the web nowadays, so that you could also attach to it a map of where the prices are, that they've already been on the web looking for the ticket. If you also included a map, and it doesn't have to show the prices exactly, but it can be color-coded, you know, where it's expensive and it's cheap, that I think that even the visitors would be able to know how this works out. What some cities do in addition to charging for parking, that I like the idea of places like Stratford or athletic events, is that included in the price of the ticket is a free transit pass. If the ticket to it, say in San Francisco, they have a 30,000 seat stadium with 900 parking spaces, but in the price of your ticket, you get a free ride transit anywhere in San Francisco on the day. And because they have so many people who want to ride transit, they have special buses that go to from different parts of town straight to the Chase Stadium. So I think that telling people in advance that here's a way to save money is the best way to go about it. And I think under your system and similar systems, the parking meters themselves tell the city what the price should be. You just have to listen to the parking space and say, I'm too cheap or I'm too expensive. And I think that what you touched on, that you'll have so much data on what affects the occupancy other than price, the weather, the time of day, the time of year. The Christmas is, before Christmas is different from early January.
Exactly.
That's artificial intelligence, of course, I'm sure you're already using it, but it will be even more important to analyze the data. I mean, you have an immense amount of data. And I think one of the things, of course, that I suppose your customers want, and certainly academics want, is to have pilot programs to say, well, if we raise the price here, what did happen? That we want to know what were the effects of changes in policy. If we extended the time period, it's not two-hour parking, change it to four-hour parking. Well, what happened? Or if you change the price, what happened to the revenue? What happened to the occupancy? And I think when I look at trade shows, all the events that show what your company does and what all the other companies do, I'm really impressed by the dashboards that you produce so that the users, I mean the cities, the parking authorities, can ask a question and get an answer as to what will happen if I do this or if I do that. And, is that already common now?
Yeah, I mean, it is. Some are better than others. Ours, we really focused on listening to our customers, which are the, parking professionals and transportation professionals in cities, to basically take real-time occupancy of each of the stalls and to present the data in such a way that people can create policies that help them achieve their objectives for the city. So, for example, what's the occupancy during these time periods and what's the dwell time, how long are people staying in each of the stalls, and where do you have your hot spots and during what times of day. Even something as simple as there are regulations across North America for how many ADA stalls you must have as a percentage of the total stalls. Well, what you find in cities is that sometimes some of the stalls are extremely busy and always occupied. And so if you need an ADA stall, you're driving around and you're very frustrated because there's none where you want near where you're trying to go. And then in other areas, of course, in the city, because the numbers, legislated, there might be stalls that are never used. So if you can imagine you're trying to set policy as a city and you're saying, well, I'm meeting my policy, but you're not actually meeting the needs of the people who need an ADA stall or an EV stall or, a quick stop stall. So by having the real-time occupancy and true, I'm talking true occupancy, not inferred kind of from payments, and we'll talk about payments in a minute, but really true occupancy, you can then go and set policies that help you achieve your objectives. And speaking about the payments, back to the dashboard. So these dashboards are very, very important. Being able to get the right analytics in those dashboards and then be able to go and create appropriate reporting so that people understand. Because if you can imagine, there's tons and tons of data in the database, as thousands of parking transactions. So you really need to be able to sift through that data and figure out what's happening. And as you pointed out before, was there weather that day? Was there a snowstorm? Was there rain? Is there a Taylor Swift concert in town that's kind of, certainly had a big impact on the data? And you can imagine a world when you have this wonderful, rich parking data in the future where, city managers and, some of the larger city centers, maybe LA, for example, are saying, there's going to be a ton of pollution tomorrow. We really need to encourage people not to take their cars. So we're going to drive pricing up on those days for parking. And we're going to communicate, because we understand people's patterns. We're going to communicate to everyone who has signed up for this, that, hey, don't take your car downtown tomorrow. Take public transit. And here's a voucher. And that's a bit of an extreme example of public policy being driven by parking. But I think it's not too far in the future. And you can imagine now where you can achieve all sorts of objectives, really, by understanding where people are parking, what the spots are, where they're going, that sort of stuff, on an anonymized basis, of course, as opposed to, Big Brother spying on people. But a lot of this data really is anonymized. So that's kind of where we see it. The dashboard is incredibly important. We also think that the driver side and getting that information into the driver's hand is also really, really important.
That is it for this episode. The conversation keeps going and it only gets better. But you'll have to wait until episode 110, a conversation with Dan Mathers and Donald Shoup about parking technology part 2, which will release in 2 weeks, to hear the rest of this fascinating conversation.
Hey there, this is Brian Wolf with Parker Technology, a sponsor for the Parking Podcast. Parker Technology is the customer experience solution of choice for the parking industry. Our solution puts a virtual ambassador in every lane to help parking guests pay and get on their way in under a minute. Whether you utilize our customer service team or your team in conjunction with our software platform, or a combination of both, we help you capture revenue, provide better customer service, enable your staff to focus on higher priority tasks, and most importantly, keep your traffic moving. With the Parker Technology solution, you'll also enjoy real-time access to call data and recordings. Learn more at parkertechnology.com/parking podcast and subscribe to our podcast, Harder Than It Looks, Parking Uncovered.
If you're as much as a fan of Donald Shoup as we are, you may want to check out our merch. We have some really cool Shoup-inspired t-shirts, mugs, and more that help you support the podcast and support parking reform. Check them out at parkingcast.com/swag or click the link in the show notes. This episode is brought to you by Parkalytics, a company I'm very excited about. Parkalytics uses drones to capture images and then specialized software to perform vehicle counts, utilization reports, and turnover studies. Parking consultants can now perform in-depth parking studies for off-street lots, on-street parking, and vehicular traffic without ever having to leave their home for a fraction of the price of a traditional parking study. Parking operators can use this tool to get accurate parking data to make better decisions on lease management deals. The list goes on and on, but check it out for yourself at parkalytics.com or click the link in the show notes. This episode is brought to you by Parking Citation Auditors, and they do exactly what their name says. They will audit your parking citation data and collections methods to provide a review of your citation management performance and give recommendations and best practices on how to improve your citation management and collections process. Look, every city in America with parking enforcement has thousands, if not millions, of unpaid parking ticket debt. It's time to get a handle on your data to better manage your parking citation management vendors and improve your collections percentage to bring more revenue back to your city. And most importantly, this audit is absolutely free. Learn more at parkingcast.com/PCA or click the link in the show notes to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Pave Mobility. Pave Mobility is the leader in automated parking enforcement. Pave installs fixed LPR cameras at no charge to you or your operation. Pave then captures parkers who did not make a payment or are not on a credential list and sends them a notice in the mail. Learn why so many asset owners and operators are switching over to Pave at pavemobility.com, or you can just message me. I'd love to get involved and personally help with your account. This episode is brought to you by Amtech. Amtech is an electrical, technologies, and fire safety contractor with offices and teams positioned across the Mid-South. Whether your parking structure needs new electrical panels and EV charger updates, CCTV and parking sensor installations, or inspections of a fire suppression system, Amtech can handle it for you. They bring honesty and a friendly attitude to every job. Learn more at amtech.com. That's A-M-T-E-C-H PARKECK.com. This episode is brought to you by NoiseView Audio Security. NoiseView installs discrete security technology in your parking facilities designed to identify different sounds of importance, such as glass breaking, gunshots, fights, Cadillac converter theft, and more, to notify your security staff immediately. Learn why more and more parking facilities are installing NoiseView to improve their safety at an incredibly low price at www.noiseview.com, and that's view, V-U, or you can click the link in the show notes.